This is an interview with Dr. Donald A. Gross, M.D., for the Youngstown State University History of Medicine in the Youngstown and Mahoning Valley by Paul Zimmerman at 362 West Liberty Street in Hubbard, Ohio, on November 20th, 1974 at 5:45 p.m. Dr. Gross, just what influenced you to become a doctor?
Well, I'd always wanted to be one because when I was small, I lived next door to one, and I used to drive his horses for him, and I got interested in it that way. I mean, this was out in a country town, Montoursville, and there weren't very many automobiles, and at that time, this doctor had three horses that he used, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. And he used to get tired, so he'd let me drive. And a lot of times, patients from out in the country would come in and have no way to get home. I mean, they'd just arrive and they'd always call him. So he'd call me to take them home. And I could take them about anywhere in the county.
I see. What was this doctor's name?
Dr. J.W. Van Horn. And he wasn't such an old man, but he was awful busy.
Must have been to need three horses a day. That's...
Well, he used them.
Did he give you any help later on in your career?
No, he never knew I became a doctor. He was dead before I even started to study.
I see. Then as you were going through high school, you pursued this idea of becoming a doctor?
Well, the more I thought of it, the more I thought I wanted to be one, because it looked like a pretty easy life for him.
Uh-huh.
He didn't ever seem to work very hard, but he seemed to make a lot of money, although he didn't ever keep any of it. He lost it all in gambling.
I see. Well, then, when you went to medical school, what were your, could you give us some of the impressions you had of what the school life was like and just the attitude of the students of the time?
Well, I went to a medical school when it only took 5 years. We didn't have to go to college to get a degree. They gave you your pre-medical course right at the college 1 year, and then we went into medicine. And my impression, I didn't think it'd be very hard when I started, but gee, after the first year of it, I didn't think I'd ever be a doctor. I didn't think it would be possible to ever get through.
Did it seem like there was a multitude of knowledge to learn?
Oh, seemed like I didn't know anything. It was quite a change from high school.
About what age were you when you graduated then?
I was 21.
21 when you graduated from medical school. Did you go into practice right away, or did you have to serve an internship?
I served an internship 1 year at Youngstown Hospital.
What influenced you to come to Youngstown?
Well, I had a roommate that lived over there, and he got me to come out there, because I was originally from Pennsylvania, and that's where I had hoped to go back and practice.
Uh-huh. But have you ever regretted coming to Youngstown?
No. No, Youngstown's been pretty good to me. I couldn't find anything to complain about.
Then that would have been around what year then you came to Youngstown?
When I came there?
Yeah.
1915.
You arrived in Youngstown and you served your internship where? Did they have Northside?
Northside.
Northside.
From 1919 to 1920.
And then when you were in the Navy, could you tell us some things about that? That was immediately...
Well, that wasn't much of a deal. It happened when I was a junior in medical college. And I didn't I'd gotten up that far, and I didn't think I'd ever be able to make it through the rest of the course. And I was running out of money pretty fast. So they had a drive on to enlist Navy recruits. So about 14 of us went down to the Navy Yard and enlisted. And they told us at the time we enlisted that they would call us immediately for service. But we never got called. They sent us back to medical school, and that's where we finished. Only they paid us $110 a month, and our board, we could get our board wherever we wanted. They allowed us so much for food.
Was this a big help to you at the time?
Well, it was the best help I ever had. I'd never gotten to be a doctor if it hadn't been for that.
So you have one of the first GI Bills in existence then, so to speak. Did you have to serve any overseas at all or anything like this?
We never even saw a boat.
that's
the only thing we had to do was we had to drill on Saturday mornings, or we had to pass inspection, rather. There wasn't any drilling to it, but we had to be shined up like a new dime when we went to school on Saturday morning, and it didn't take only a second. We just walked by the officer, and he just saluted, and that's all there was to it.
I see. Well, when you came to Youngstown then, how could you compare the doctors in Youngstown to the doctors in Philadelphia? Was it stepping down, or was it about the same?
No, it was about the same. I thought they were pretty good boys over in Youngstown. They had some pretty smart doctors.
I see. Okay, you've arrived in Youngstown. Around what year did you establish your practice?
1920.
Was that here in Hubbard that you
mm-hmm.
did that? What made you decide to come to Hubbard?
Well, the mayor of Hubbard at that time was a patient in the hospital, and they had over here in Hubbard five doctors, but they were all about 80 years old, and he wanted somebody that was younger, so he told me he'd pay my office rent if I'd come over and establish a practice, although he never did pay the office rent, but he but he did get me over here.
A good politician, huh?
Yeah. But it was a good move because I had only been here a month when the 1920 flu epidemic broke out here, and it was very simple to make money. You could make it, at least I thought it was, because $1,000 a month was a big salary at that time. And I was running higher than that. But of course, when the flu epidemic was over, it went down.
Did that help you establish a pretty strong practice then?
Yeah, I had a very strong practice. In fact, I was so damn busy, I didn't know whether I was going or coming for a long time.
Just where did you have your first office?
I had it down on North Main Street. It was about two stores down from Reardon's. I don't know what the number was.
Do you remember the name of the mayor that influenced you to come here?
Charles White.
Charlie White. Okay, so now you're here. Did you use a horse and buggy, or did you buy a car?
No, I started out with a car.
Is that one of your first investments?
That was one of my first investments. In fact, that was a gift from my mother when I started. She gave me some money to get to buy equipment, and that was the first thing I bought. And I think I drove that car about 150,000 miles, but it was a good car, and I never had much trouble with it.
What kind was it?
It was a Dodge.
Dodge.
Yeah, it was a good car. One of the best. I think during my lifetime, I must have had about 20 Dodges. Well, I've had every kind of car there is. Cadillacs and Lincolns and Oldsmobiles and Buicks. I've used all of them. But I didn't ever drive them over here.
I see. Except for the first one.
Well, the first one I did. Well, there never was anything wrong with it, so I just kept driving it. There's no use buying a new one.
Now, you needed the car for your business. Was most of your practice in the office, or was it house calls?
No, at that time, it was mostly house calls. I had a young fellow that was a driver for me, and we traversed this whole Trumbull County, I think. We'd have start out in the morning, and I'd have maybe 30 calls to make, and then I had office hours only in the afternoon, and then we'd start out after office hours and make maybe 30 more. But it was a busy time.
How many days a week did you work?
Every day.
7 days.
We didn't have any days off then.
How about in your internship? Did you work every day?
Oh, yeah, at the intern. Well, of course, you don't have to work too hard there. That wasn't too tough.
You thought that was pretty simple compared to what happened later then.
Yeah.
Well, who were some of the doctors in town when you came to Youngstown?
There were the Clarks, A.M. and C.R., and Cervandi and Alcester and Beekner and M.P. Jones. Of course, Fenton was there, and Schofield and Alsop, Jack Lewis, Ed Goldkamp. They were all the old gang.
Were most of these men family doctors?
No, Goldkamp was the nose and throat man. He was the first fellow to do laryngoscopies and so forth. And Lewis was a GU man, and he was pretty well up in GU. I mean, he did a lot of work that hadn't been done before in GU.
Well, since you knew these men, how much of your practice did you send to doctors, say, like, did you deliver babies yourself, or did you have another doctor?
Oh, no, I delivered babies. I don't know how many, but I delivered them for so damn long. I got so sick of delivering babies, I finally decided that one day, to hell with it, I quit. So they always come at night or at some time when you wanted to go someplace or do something.
I see. Well, you started to tell us about what a typical day was like. Just what things did you treat in your office?
Well, just sore throats and colds and stuff like that.
How about broken arms? Did you handle that kind of
thing? Yeah. I did all kinds of fractures and everything in that line, in the medical line. In fact, I was on the surgical staff at the Youngstown Hospital for about 25 years.
So you didn't need the services of another physician to be a surgeon. You were the surgeon too for your patient.
Yeah, well, I got that in my training as an intern over there.
I see. Did you treat patients for things like eyeglasses and things like this?
Oh, no. No, I wasn't any specialist in that.
What kind of medications were available then? Say, like 1920?
Well, it wasn't too much. We had no antibiotics, and we didn't have anything much except for fever and for cough. And we used to have a heck of a time stopping coughs, but we get them we got them stopped.
What would you say were the most serious diseases?
At that time?
Yeah.
Well, pneumonia and typhoid, diphtheria, and whooping cough and things like that.
And there wasn't much you could do for any of them, is that right?
No. Well, they did have a vaccine come out for whooping cough that worked very good, and of course, diphtheria and a toxin was very good.
Getting back to the hospital now, what were your impressions of the hospital? Did you have to hospitalize very often?
You mean, did I have to send patients in?
Yes.
I had to send quite a few in. But there's acute appendices and gallbladders and things like that.
Well, this surgery, would you perform that yourself then?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you made rather extensive use of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you say were the leaders in the hospital of this time, the men that ran it?
Well, Dr. Morrison was probably he did more for the hospital than anybody else. He collected money and started to build the south side, and then he got subscription for the north side and built that. But I think he did more for them than anybody.
I see. On an everyday basis, which doctors were the ones that had control over things at Northside Hospital?
Well, Morrison had more control on anybody, but I'd say Morrison and Buechner and Chervon, they probably had more to do with the running of it, and Clark.
Now, when doctors practiced in Youngstown, did they basically stay with one hospital, or did they travel back and forth between Southside and Northside?
They traveled back and forth. If you were on the staff at the south side, then that automatically put you on the north side.
I see. How many doctors were there in town during the 20s on the staff?
Oh, God, I wouldn't know how many there were over there. Because my work was mostly over here, except I was over there every day, and almost every day in surgery.
How many other surgeons were there?
Well, they had Schiavondi and Buechner and M.P. Jones and Bill Alsop and John Buchanan and the fellow invented Paracetamol. Oh, I had it there for a minute and it left me. Booth, Carlos Booth. They were all mill doctors. That is, they took care of examining employees for mills and taking care of their accidents.
I see.
Sidney McCurdy was head of the sheet and tube department.
Was this a big business for doctors in Youngstown, the industrial part of it?
That seemed to be the biggest business. Those were the fellows that made the money and did the work.
Did the industrial plants support the hospital at all?
Oh, yes. They still do.
You mentioned some firsts to some doctors. Did you ever have any firsts that you came up with?
What?
Firsts in medicine. Did you do anything first in Youngstown or in this area?
No, not that I'd call first.
Did you ever cooperate with anybody else in any kind of a project that would be a first in town?
Mm-mm.
How about the medical journals? You ever written anything?
No.
For publication?
No, I never had time then.
Well, how about in later years? Did you ever get around?
I have plenty of time now, but I don't. I'm about 12, 3/4 or 4/5 retired now.
I see.
I don't make any house calls, and I just take care of a few of my old patients here. Oh, I go to the nursing homes to see some of the patients.
What are your impressions of the nursing homes?
Well, when they first started, I didn't think much of them, because you couldn't get much cooperation with the nursing home, but they're much better now.
Would you say they get fairly good care in most of the nursing homes around here?
Well, I'd say they get very good care.
Okay, well, getting back to the 1920s, you were fairly successful in the 20s, you said. How about the 30s? Did that create any problems for you with the Depression?
Well, no, I got sick along about the 1928, and Clark and Alsop and those fellows called me in the office one day, in the hospital office, and they said, "Take off your clothes." They scared me half to death. I didn't know what they were talking about. They went over me and told me I had tuberculosis, and I'd have to quit practicing for good. And I thought, gee, that's a hell of a time to tell me that, because then I had about 4 little kids coming on, and expenses were pretty good. But they sent me up to New York to Trudeau Sanitarium for a year. And I got so tired up there of Trudeau. I felt good all the time I was there. I didn't feel like I had anything wrong with me. But they told me, I tried to convince me that I had. And I said, "There, you're crazy. I don't have it." And I got to know the x-ray man up there, and he would take pictures of my chest, and he would let me examine all. Of course, I had access to all his pictures. I could go in and look at anybody's chest, and it didn't matter to him. But he would take mine and put them up, and I'd study them, and I could never see anything in them. And he said he couldn't either when I was up there. But I had two of the outstanding chest men in the country taking care of me. They wouldn't let me out of there. They said, "Nope, I had to stay there." So I got tired of it, and I thought, "Well, I got to get out of here somehow." So I told them I had to come home. I had to build a part on my house. So when I got out of there, I'd have a place to stay. Well, they let me come home for 3 days, but I never went back. I went to Tucson, Arizona. They had given me a letter. I wrote to them after I come home, and they asked them if I couldn't go out there or go someplace else. And they gave me a letter to a couple doctors out in Tucson, and I visited them, but I only stayed there a week because it was too damn hot for me. And I went on to California and spent almost a year out there. And I didn't do anything except just play around on the beach and play with the kids. But I didn't do any work. I had lots of opportunities to go into practice out there, but I didn't do it. I think primarily because my wife's folks all live back here, and she wouldn't stay out there. She would now, but she wouldn't then.
I see. So when you came back to Youngstown then, you had a clean bill of health?
Well, nobody ever gave me a clean bill of health. I wrote to the insurance company. I had spent a lot of my money when I was making it on insurance, and of course that paid paid me pretty well, because they would they sent me a check every month for about $1,500, and that would keep you pretty well in those days. So I was never bothered with any money matters. And when I come back here, I wrote to the company and told them to cut off my checks because I was going back to work and I didn't think I need them anymore. But no doctor had ever discharged me. I'd never been discharged from having TB.
Well, was TB pretty prevalent back then?
Well, it was a lot more prevalent than it is now. Of course, now they have drugs that they can fight it, but they didn't have anything then.
What was the treatment for TB in the 20s? Yeah.
Well, mostly just rest and fresh air.
I see. How about some of the other diseases? Now, like the pneumonia. Did most people die of pneumonia?
Well, an awful lot of them died. Pneumonia seemed to be different than it is. It was different then than it is now. Now you get a patient with pneumonia and you give them a big shot of penicillin or some other antibiotic, and in 2 days they're over. But in those days you used to have to wait for a crisis, maybe 7 days. They'd run a high temperature spiking up to 104, 105. Then they'd have what they call a crisis. They'd break out in a sweat and their temperature dropped down, and then they start getting better. But they don't act that way now.
So what drug would you say was the first one that helped you in your practice the most?
I have no idea.
What are your impressions on, like, when the sulfa drugs came out?
Well, they were very good. I got very good success with them.
And then, like, penicillin, you had no qualms about using something like this at all, right?
No, I use an awful lot of penicillin now.
How about the people during the 1930s? What year did you come back to Hubbard? What year did you start your practice again then?
Oh, well, I left here in 1928, and I came back in 1933.
Were the people able to pay you then?
When I went out there, I got an intern, or one of the boys that was an intern, to come over and take my practice. I told him he could have my cars and use my house and use everything. He wouldn't have any expenses to on that part, just to keep the practice going. And when I come back, I found out I had a couple of mill jobs at one Valley Mold and Power Press Steel, and they were good paying jobs. And he had interviewed them and tried to get those away from me, and he just stayed here in Hubbard. But he didn't get them. They didn't go for him. So I got them back again, and then he left. And he went down south somewhere, and he became a professor of orthopedics.
Really?
Of course, that's what he was waiting for when he took this job. He was going to just take it, because he had to wait a year or two to get that, and he didn't have nothing to do, so he took the job here waiting for that opportunity to come up. Well, it came up when I came back, but he had tried to get these other jobs because he made real good money, and I guess he figured, well, if I can do that good in a small town like this, he just as easily stay here. But he went down to Birmingham, Alabama, became professor of orthopedics in I don't remember what school it was down there, whether it was University of Georgia or Well, it was one of the state universities down there that he got to be professor of orthopedics.
I see. Well, then, when you came back, what would have been the mainstay of your practice then? Would have been, what I'm getting at, were the people in town here able to pay your fees?
Oh, yeah.
They were able to pay, huh?
Yeah.
Because some of the doctors I've talked to said they had trouble, like, during the 30s, and nobody had any money, and they had a trouble
making ends meet. I didn't have any trouble collecting fees. That didn't seem to bother me at all. I have more trouble now collecting than I had then.
Really? That's fantastic. But you say the mill jobs did help out the doctors quite a bit.
Well, they helped out because that was constant. The mills paid you regularly, and you didn't have to depend on a private individual.
I see. Some of the other things you've talked about so far, you've talked about some of the doctors, you know, they looked at the money aspect of it, you know, how successful they were going to be. Do you see any difference between the doctors today and the doctors yesterday as far as this is concerned?
Well, to me it seems that the younger doctors, that's their prime interest is making money. I don't know how they manage it, but they seem to do pretty well. I notice most of them come out and well, they have ever since I've been out. I noticed the younger doctors would come out and they'd buy a big car and put on a big show, buy a real nice house, and they all seem to do pretty well. I remember before I started over here, I came over and I interviewed all of these old doctors, McMurray and Bond and Button and there's a couple more, I can't think of their names now. And I asked them if they'd have any objection to my starting in Hubbard. And they all said no, they'd be glad to send me work. And they sure did send it to me.
Now these McMurray, Bond, and Button, they were the three doctors that were already here in Hubbard.
Yeah, they were three of the oldest ones. They were in about like I am now, partial practice. They didn't work all the time.
I see. Could you tell us a little bit about some of these men, like Dr. McMurray, what they were like, and how long they'd been practicing? Do you know anything about them?
I don't know how long they've been practicing. I know Bond did pretty good. He built an apartment house, and he had a lot of land down the center of town that he made a lot of money off of. But and he was quite an inventor. He invented the first automobile he drove, or he built it himself, and. He was a very versatile fella.
Was he one of the leaders of the community?
No, he didn't have much civic pride, but he was certainly a smart fella. And he invented a black mixture that he used to give every patient, didn't matter what the hell they had, whether they had diarrhea or whether they had pneumonia or what it was, that black medicine cured them all. And when he died, I bought out all the stuff he had, and there was, I suppose, 4 or 5 gallons of that black medicine. And I had people writing in from all over the state of Ohio for that black medicine of his. I finally used it all up. I didn't know what was in it, because he never told me what was in it, but he said that'll cure anything.
Did it?
No, I don't think so. I didn't think much of it. Didn't do anything for me. But these people that had used it thought it did. So as long as they thought it did, Well, let him. Let him use it. Pretty. I got that much to tell you.
Well, I'll have to pump a little bit maybe, but we'll get it. Did you ever have any other problems? Well, this wasn't a problem, but did you have any problems with people taking home remedies of their own or anything like this?
Well, most of them took home remedies at that time. I mean, they had all kinds of cures for everything, and they'd use those before they come to a doctor. But ultimately, they'd come.
I see. Now, did any of these remedies work that you know of? Did you ever get any clues from anything?
Well, in obstetrics, a lot of the babies that were born here were born by midwives. I mean, they had a bunch of midwives that would go out and take care of them. I know I got called many a time to help them out.
To help the midwife?
Yeah, they'd get stuck and they couldn't deliver, and I'd have to go out and put forceps on them and help them out. And Button, he used to get in a lot of trouble with it because he didn't know how to put forceps on, and he was a big man. He was about 6'6", and he had big hands, and he couldn't get into a woman's pelvis very well. So he used to get in trouble, and he called me out primarily to give an anesthetic so he could do it. But he always ended up giving the ether and me doing the work.
Did you have any problem with home abortions or anything like this back in your early days?
Well, I don't know whether they were, we had plenty of premature labors I suppose they were abortions, people trying to get rid of a child, because I'd get calls for women that were bleeding like everything, and I'd have to put them in the hospital and pack their uterus and then go in and take out the packing, and usually the placenta would come out with it.
I see. Did this, have you noticed any change in people's attitudes towards doctors and Hubbard over the years?
No, only thing I notice is that they always go for the newest one that comes in. They go to him rather than to the older ones.
They're willing to try a new doctor right away then?
Yeah. We have 3 osteopaths here, and geez, they're so damn busy they can't, I don't know when they sleep, because I have an office girl here that works for me on Saturdays. She does my tax work, but she had worked for me full time a short time ago when my son was practicing with me. We had to have 2 nurses and two girls to work on taxes and fill out papers and so on. And that's when we got her. But when he quit, well, I fired all the help we had, because, hell, I couldn't afford to pay him. The expense was too high. I was paying out a damn sight more than I was making for a while.
Yeah. Back in the 20s, when you first started in practice, were you able to afford to have a nurse and an office girl and everything in your office?
No, I had a girl that I trained, and she was pretty good. I trained her to give hypodermics and do minor things. She's still working for me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, she was off for 4 or 5 years when we built the building down there and hired full-time nurses. Well, we let her go. But then when I had to get rid of the building, and had no place to put these people, I had to let them go. So I called her and asked her if she wanted to work again. She said yes, so she's still working.
Were you called to do anything during the Second World War, as far as a military service type thing or public service? You just, your practice went on as normal then?
Just the same. No, I was too old for the draft then, so they didn't want fellows like me.
Did you ever get involved in local politics or civic activities of Hubbard or anything like that? How about continuing education? What did you do to keep up with medicine?
Well, I've taken, I think, 10 trips abroad and 6 or 8 down to South America and in the Bahamas and the West Indies. These trips that county societies, but I got started on it with our Jefferson Medical College. They started putting on seminars. First one they put on was in Paris, and the next one was in Vienna, then Madrid, and they sent us to about 10 different countries in Europe, one a year, for 2 weeks. And we had professors from over there, but that's the only thing I've ever done as far as continuing education. I don't know what the...
Did you find that was a help in your practice?
Oh, they help, because you learn something new every time. I had some certificates here of those trips. Put them. But I had a bunch of them out here the other day. I was looking for some for a paper for the number on my safe, and I couldn't find it. And I went through the drawers here, and I saw these things, but I don't know where I put them. I think I just gave them to Mary and says, "Here, you can burn these up."
So you were in your work as a surgeon. What would you say were the greatest advances in surgical technique over the years?
Oh, the greatest advances were in the types of material and the instruments they used. They use a lot different stuff now than they did when I was doing it, because all we ever used was catgut and silk. Now they use stainless steel and this fish line, what do they call it? Oh, it's made out of fish line. It's very, very strong and very smooth and easy to handle. But I'd say it's most advantages are in the materials that you use.
That enables the surgeon to be able to do a better job?
Oh, he can do a better job, and he doesn't get the recurrences.
Was this a big problem, the recurrences?
Well, yeah. He used to get a lot of recurring hernias and so forth. When the stitches, you use a chromic catgut and that stuff would dissolve before it was time and let the sutures break open again, and you have to do it over again.
How about the advances in the anesthesias? Were these any help to you?
Well, they're a great help. They, in my time, they now do a lot of spinal anesthesias, and those give you complete relaxation with very little bleeding, and they're very helpful. If you can get somebody that knows how to give them and do it.
What sort of anesthetics were in use when you first started practicing?
Oh, when we started, we used ether and chloroform was about the only two.
What came next?
Well, then next came nitrous oxide, and then spinal anesthesia. And now I don't know what they use. My son is a specialist in anesthesiology. I don't know what he uses now. I haven't talked to him about anesthesia for a long time.
Did you work together with your son?
We had an office downtown. We built a building down there, and we were in it for about 25 years.
So was he an expert in anesthesia then?
No, he hadn't started. That's why I had to sell it. He decided to hell with this working day and night and not getting anywhere. He was going to get an easier job than that, so he went over and took a course at the North Side. Spent 2 years on a residency over there in anesthesiology. Now he's one of the anesthetists up at St. Joseph's in Warren.
I see. Do you think there are excessive demands made of a doctor?
There are what?
Excessive demands made on a doctor, on his time and everything that's in family practice.
Well, I don't think so. A lot of people do think so, but I don't think so. Of course, people go to a doctor a lot more often than they did in the old days. They used home remedies for a while, and if they didn't die, well, then they go to a doctor. But now they go to a doctor for every time they get the sniffle or a runny nose or something, or they call a doctor.
What would you attribute this to?
Well, I suppose it could be attributed to the fact that people made more money and they took better care of themselves.
Did you have any problem with people not trusting you to treat their sons or daughters?
I don't think so.
Say, like, well, how about with the various immigrant groups that came in? Did you have any problems with the various ethnic groups or anything like that?
Problem. As long as we had an interpreter that could tell us what it was all about.
Okay. Could you tell us some more about some of these other doctors that were the mainstay, so to speak, of the Youngstown Hospital Association? Just what your impression was of these men, like Dr. Morrison and Dr. Elsesser and Dr. Fisher?
Well, they all, Dr. Morrison didn't have, he made rounds every day, but Shirbondi would only make rounds and only work 2 days a week in surgery, and Beekner would work 2 days a week in surgery, and M.P. Jones would work whenever he could get in or whenever he had something to do, and so did Alsop. They'd work every day if they had something to do. I don't know how it is now. I haven't been up in surgery over here at Northside for over a year.
Would you say the surgeons work pretty hard then, or were they pretty independent about
it? Oh, they were pretty independent. They all had nice homes and all made good money.
Would you say surgery is one of the best branches as far as the monetary reward?
That's the one I'd like. I mean, the one I liked best when I was doing it.
I see. Do you think it takes a special breed of man to become a surgeon?
I don't think so. I think anybody can be trained to do that.
You don't think it takes any special skills or anything like that?
I don't see it. That it does.
Okay, in some of the later, in your later practice, did your practice change any over the years as to what you performed for people?
Well, it changed in this respect. I don't have any millwork to do anymore. I don't have any suturing or any fractures or stuff like that that I used to do a lot of. I don't have that at all. About all I have now is sore throats and maybe sniffles or something like that, but not enough to keep me halfway busy.
Have you had any very interesting cases over the years that you'd like to tell us about? One or two that stick out in your mind as being very interesting, and maybe the treatment or the disease?
No, back when I was doing it, I had a lot of them, but I don't remember. I can't just recall. Pick one out that would be more interesting than the others, but they all used to interest me a lot then.
Uh-huh. Well, just give me a typical day, say like 1935. What would you have been doing from the time you got up? When would you have gotten up?
I get up at 6:30, and I'd have gotten out by 7:30. And I didn't have any hours until 1 o'clock, so I'd make calls from 7:30 to 1, or go to the hospital. I was on staff, and of course we had to take care of all the indigent cases that come in, and I was over there pretty near every day.
These indigent cases, how much of a problem was that to you? Was it a big percentage?
Well, it was practically all. Most of the surgery I was doing then was free surgery. The patients didn't pay anything. I don't think they even paid the hospital. The city of Youngstown paid the hospital.
Who paid the doctor then?
He didn't get paid.
What good was there to be on staff then?
Well, that's the way you're supposed to learn. That's where we got our start.
I see. So they didn't have anything like insurances or anything like that at that time? You mentioned you had the insurance on your health.
Well, I bought insurance because I had a lot of friends that were insurance agents. They were always trying to sell me something. And the more money I made, the more I spent for insurance. The reason for that was that when I first started, I would buy from any, these stockbrokers, and they had a lot of young fellows that were out on the streets selling stocks, and they'd come in and they sold me I don't know how many $1,000s worth of stocks, and there wasn't any of them worth a damn. I never got a dime out of any of them. I lost it all, so I decided, I'll buy something that if something happens to me, I'll have something to protect my family. So that's how I bought the insurance.
But this wasn't a prevalent practice at the time.
No, I don't think very many fellows were buying much insurance. I bought it on the advice of these older doctors. They said, what the hell, and my banker. He says, God, he says, if I run the bank the way you run your office, there wouldn't be any bank and there wouldn't be any money for anybody because you don't know whether anything's any good or not. You just buy whatever they put on the table for you. And I did, I guess.
Do you think that doctors have become smarter about their business end of their practice over the years?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about how, like, the Blue Cross came about in Youngstown?
No, I don't know anything about the origin of that.
When did the Blue Cross first started showing up, like, say, in your practice, people started having health insurance?
Well, I think it was probably 15 or 20 years ago, but I couldn't tell you for sure because I don't remember. I know when it first came out, I bought it, and I've been paying into it ever since. And it's paid back some of it because I was in a hospital in California with meningitis, and I was out there for 3 months, and they paid me all the time I was out there.
These indigent patients in the hospital, did they help you in any way as far as your surgery went?
No, just that they were there, that we could work on them and fix them up and watch them right straight through, see if anything hurt happened afterwards.
I see. So then in later years, this was a good experience for you to have.
Yeah.
But that didn't make your living. Your living was made by your family practice back here in Hubbard.
Well, it was after I got had enough years in on doing that at the hospital for free, then I could operate and charge for it. And it made quite a difference in the income.
I see. Would you say that most doctors in the 1920s and 30s were well-to-do or middle class, or just what was the economic status?
No, I think the fellows that just did plain medicine, they had kind of a hard time because they didn't make much money. But the fellows that did surgery, they did pretty good.
How about the specialists? Were there very many specialists in the 20s?
Well, the specialists, I think, have always done pretty well because people could afford, I mean, if you spoke of a specialist, well, they had the money, they'd go there. But you couldn't talk specialists to somebody that was just making in a low income class because they couldn't pay. And the specialists had to get there, had to do a lot of that free work too. They still do. I mean, they still have to take out tonsils and stop hemorrhage at the hospital most any time of night if they're on staff.
As far as you know, has there ever been anybody neglected as far as medical care around this area?
I don't think so. It's not that I know of.
How would you rate the medical care in Youngstown?
I'd rate it very high from what I've seen elsewhere.
I'd say you're a pretty qualified observer, having been all over the world and viewed things. How would you compare our hospitals here to what you saw overseas?
Well, I think they're better than the ones overseas.
course, that's my personal opinion. Maybe I didn't see all of it, but it looked a lot better to me. The hospitals I saw overseas, I mean, and I saw a lot of them, they were old buildings. Geez, the plaster was coming off the walls, and they looked like they ought to have been torn down and replaced, but they weren't kept up like they are here.
I see. Just how many specialists were there in the 20s? When did the age of specialization arrive in medicine, so to speak?
Oh, they had a neurologist. They must have had six or eight nose and throat men and ear men. They had, I think, two proctologists, Fusey and Smith. But that's all I know.
Who were the neurologists?
Meltzer was one of them, and Sam Weaver, and Sam later moved out to California. He didn't stay here very long.
How about the nose and throat men? Who were they?
Oh, there are a lot of those.
Some of the outstanding ones, maybe.
Well, it was Hartzell, Goldkamp, Bierkamp, and Ray Hall, Vern Goodwin. Now, Hartzell and Goldkamp, they're all gone except John Goldkamp. He's doing nothing but eye work, but he's busy most of the time. And Peabody's in with him, the two of them. Although I don't think they have a corporation. I think they just share the same offices.
Was this a fairly lucrative business, these specialties in the 20s?
It seems to be. They seem to take a hell of a lot of vacation.
Do you think the doctors as a group take quite a few vacations? Did you notice that?
Well, I always did until lately. Of course, I guess I do take as many now as I did then. But it was a little easier to take them then. I had more money.
Well, you didn't always just take working vacations then, is that right?
Oh, no, no, no. No, I used to take a month off and go over in the mountains in Pennsylvania in the summertime when the kids were small. My mother had a cottage up in the mountains and right where two streams converged. And the kids had a great time up there, and I'd take them up there for a month.
Did you know anybody about anything about the foundations of the X-ray department at the Youngstown Hospitals?
I know John Heberding founded it. He and then Ed Baker. Baker came on after Heberding. Heberding had the first X-ray in the hospital, and then he had an office up on Rand Avenue. But he died quite a long time ago, and I think Baker took over then, and after Baker came Dr. Miller. She must have been over there at that hospital now for 40 or 45 years.
Did you know anybody that had anything to do with it besides Dr. Heberding, as far as the foundations of it, or did he work pretty much alone?
No, he trained, I think he trained Baker, and he trained some of the other fellows that are over there, but they have so damn many now, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Who's an X-ray man and who isn't?
Well, did anybody, where did he get his ideas?
Who?
Mr. or Dr. Heberding.
Well, he just come up with them himself.
So he was an original thinker. He was a pretty clever guy.
Yeah.
over the years, has there been anything that you've done in your that's happened to you in your practice that if you had to do it all over again, you'd do differently?
Not that I know of. I think I'd done it just the same.
You do it just the same. You run it pretty much the way you had it planned. Dr. Gross, do you have any feelings about the government intervention into medicine?
Yeah, I do. I think they should keep their hands off because they make it worse. The way they have it set up, paying for the poor people's doctor bills and so forth, it sends an awful lot of malingerers, I think, because how they come in here, and I don't think there's a thing wrong with them. They seem to be apparently all right. They keep coming back and filling up your waiting room, and then they all have papers that have to be filled out. My girl just keeps busy filling out papers all the time and answering a telephone, because they're always on the telephone or wanting papers or something that's free. They don't have to pay for it, so they just ask for it.
So do you see any difference between this and the derelict cases that used to have to go to the hospital?
No, I think probably the derelict cases that went to the hospital were treated better than they are now. For example, I have a patient who is he's about 80 years old, and he has diabetes and hypertension, and he had a stroke on his left side. He's paralyzed, and he can just barely talk, and he can't hear very good. And I had a hell of a time getting him into the hospital. Now he could afford to pay his hospital bill if they'd given him a bed, but they wouldn't give him a bed. They wanted him in on Medicare. Well, I finally got him in the hospital on Medicare, and then they wanted him out of there in 3 days into a nursing home because they didn't want him taking up a bed, just laying there and eating and sleeping and being bathed and so on. The guy that went to get him out of the hospital yesterday, I signed him out, and I went to the home where I'd signed him, and he wasn't there, and I didn't know what had happened to him. So I went back to the hospital, and he was still in the hospital. It made me so damn mad because there was no reason for him being kept there. And I asked a nurse whether the papers weren't filled out right or what the trouble was. And she said, well, the papers weren't filled out right by the wife. And I said, well, she had been too well herself, and she lives over in Pennsylvania, and it's hard for her to get from over there into the hospital every time they want something. Well, I said, I'll get her over here, and you just give her the papers and have them filled out, and let's get him out of here today, because I want him in the nursing home. I think he'd get better care over at the nursing home than I would in the hospital, because they weren't doing a damn thing for him in the hospital. So
So he's in the nursing home now.
Do you think that the people got as good a health care in the 20s as they do now, as far as the people that can't afford to pay for a doctor?
I think he did.
The health care was available then, even though they couldn't afford
it? Oh, yeah.
So you really don't see any need for this type of health insurance or anything like
that? No, I don't see any reason why somebody should come in and look over my records and look over my patients, because that's between myself and my patient, and it should be confidential. And they, you don't know who these PSRO fellows are. If they're working for the federal government, yeah, then the Lord help us, because we'll never get anything out of it.
Well, what is this regulation exactly, in your opinion?
Well, a regulation is that every doctor is under supervision of some other doctor. You don't know who he is or anything else, but he's supposed to go over your records and see that everything is according to Hoyle, and those birds down in the federal government that have charge of regulation of medicine, they're none of them doctors. They just make their rules, and that's it. And there don't seem to be any restraint on them. In fact, I think there's about a couple hundred thousand of AMA's members that have quit because of PSRO and joined unions of their own, and I don't think that's right either. The AMA is supposed to be a society for the prevention of any mistreatment or any unjust manipulation of patients, and they have always done a pretty good job, but of late, God, they're losing more members than they're getting.
Did you support the association right from the beginning of your career?
You mean the PSRO?
No, the AMA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been an AMA member. I just paid my dues today, $384. And most counties or societies, like county societies and so forth, after you've been a member for 50 years, well, they suspend your dues. You're still able to be a member, but you don't have to pay dues. But Trumbull County, you still pay dues. So I paid mine today. Not that they didn't have to be paid until the 1st of January, but I thought, hell, I might as well get it out of the way.
So are you in the Trumbull County Association then?
Uh-huh. Well, I was in Mahoning when I was doing surgery and so forth. I was an associate member of Mahoning and a regular member of Trumbull.
I see. Well, what kind of self-policing did they have of doctors back in the earlier days?
Well, they didn't have it. I don't know if they had any, not to my knowledge, any policing that come in, except if somebody got in trouble. Well, and they went to the chief of the whatever service they were on and explained it to them, and they get helped out of service. But now I don't think you can even do that.
You think this is a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it's bad because it interferes with a lot of good doctors.
What do you think? What happened if a doctor was doing something wrong? Who did something
wrong?
Well,
he'd just be suspended.
Who would do that?
The trustees of the hospital.
Well, how did they find out about it? Were they medical men themselves, the trustees?
Well, the trustees weren't, but when the fellow went for help, if they investigated and found that he'd done something wrong that wasn't right, they'd bring him on the floor and give him a chance to explain why it was done or how it was done, and then they'd let him. Then if the trustees took it up, they'd fire him. They didn't waste any time. But now they have everybody's records going through, and they have so damn many papers filled out, they drive you crazy.
I see. Well, like back in the 20s then, if you would have been a young practicing doctor and say you were doing something that somebody didn't think was right in the hospital, would you have been approached about it?
Oh, yeah.
Who would have done this? Would it have been one of these men that you mentioned here before?
Yeah.
Who? Which one in particular would you think?
Well, I suppose Pop Morrison approached more of them than any of them.
What was his method of dealing with doctors?
Well, he was pretty smooth. And he was a politician, too. He could get by with about anything.
Was he fairly well respected then?
Yeah.
Who would you say would be the most respected doctor in Youngstown at this time?
Well, I suppose Bill Bunn is probably the most respected.
Well, how about in the 1920s?
Well, in those days, it would be C.R. Clark and Dr. Welsh. He was a medical man. There were a lot of good ones at that time that were pretty high up in medicine.
Well, C.R. Clark, just could you tell us a little bit about him, what you know?
I don't know too much about him, except I know he was one of the head medical men, and anybody that was very sick usually had him in consultation, and what he said went.
Who would you go to for consultation on a patient first, if you had a problem that you couldn't?
You mean in those days?
Yes, in those days, yeah, not now.
Well, I went to Clark.
You went to Clark.
Well, Clark and Morrison, they were present. They all went over me and pounded around and told me I had TB. And that's the reason I didn't think they knew so damn much.
You had something on them. Do you have any other impressions about doctoring over the years?
No, only I just read in this thing here about the PSRO and so forth. It says, building plan, the hospital gets warning. They got all kinds of warning. Now you can't, I mean, a fellow my age can't even operate a case in the hospital. I wouldn't even be allowed up in surgery.
Is that right?
Yeah, because I'm just too old.
Well, is there some kind of arbitrary date that they said? Or some sort of a birthday?
Yes, 65. You're through. I was reading these things this afternoon.
How was the independence of the doctors back in the 20s and 30s? Were they pretty independent of
Oh, yeah. I think they were.
Pretty much could do what you felt was right to do?
Well, I thought so. I played a lot of golf and spent a lot of time on the playground playing golf and so forth with these older fellas. And I had no trouble getting along with Of course, there were a hell of a lot of people that didn't play golf that, well, couldn't afford to join the clubs that where you play. And so they just never got out. And if you invite them out, they were tickled to death.
I see. Well, how do you view this today? Do you think the doctors want that much independence today? You think that the younger doctors will fight for it?
Yeah, they want it, because several of them have asked me to sign their applications for admission, but as I sign them, and that's the last I hear of them. I don't think they ever turn them in, because the admission is around $2,000 or $3,000 to first payment, and then it runs around, it'd be around over $100 and some a month just to belong to it, even if you didn't play at all. I don't play anymore, but my bills still come in, and they're still over $100 a month. I might get out there 2 or 3 times a month for a lunch or something. But they're damned expensive lunches.
You think this is an important thing in your life as far as your professional practice went, that it made it easier?
Well, it made it easier for me because I met the heads of these big companies, and then they'd employ me. And for that matter, I think it helped a lot.
Okay, one final question. Do you see any difference in the attitudes of the younger doctors, say like a young doctor in his late 20s and early 30s, as compared to you when you were the same age?
Well, I don't imagine there's a whole lot of difference. When I was that age, I was pretty energetic, and so are the kids now.
Do you think they're looking for more security today than maybe you were, or were you? It was just about the same?
I suppose it was just about the same.
I see. Okay, sir. Thank you. Can you think of anything else that you'd like to say?
No. I probably said too much already, but that's the way I feel about it.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.